Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's got a lot of traction yesterday. The reports of J.J. Watt, according to John Clayton, who was on our sister station up in Pittsburgh, 93.7 The Fan. This was treated as a report as if John Clayton had just sat down with J.J. Watt and got it from the man himself. Three favorites for J.J. Watt. Take a listen and see if we take this as a report or an educated opinion.
You think J.J. Watt comes here?
No, I don't. I think it's going to be Tennessee, Buffalo, or Green Bay. Probably more Tennessee or Green Bay. Outside chance of the Raiders. So I'm anxious to see what Watt's going to be able to get.
You said Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo, John. Those are the three you're hearing? Tennessee, Green Bay, Buffalo.
Yeah, then Raiders, too.
Okay.
That was the voice of Andrew Filippone, who's the afternoon host on 93.7 up in Pittsburgh.
That's the problem. So many places, I swear I saw reports where they just omitted, I think. So I saw in at least one place the quote was, it's going to be Tennessee, Buffalo, or Green Bay.
That was Filippone's tweet said that.
Oh, he got rid of I think?
Yeah.
He said it's going to be Tennessee, Buffalo, or Green Bay.
Let me find Filippone's tweet here because I read it. First of all, Andrew wasn't clear as to whether or not Clayton was on their show. He tweeted, at John Clayton NFL says J.J. Watt won't be coming to Pittsburgh. Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo are the three teams. Raiders as a dark horse.
Yeah.
The three teams. Is an affirmative, non-opinion verb.
Well, he didn't say that he was thinking or anything.
No.
That's right. I feel like it says on this update that I'm reading, this is on Packers Wire. There's another report out of some Packers blog that says that J.J.'s offers aren't as much as he had hoped or anticipated. I'm taking all that with a grain of salt because I don't think anybody really knows what J.J. anticipated. I'm guessing J.J. anticipated that, yeah, he's not going to be making the same salary he was on his $100 million a year contract. Right. One of the reasons it's nice for teams to release veteran players when they do is that they get time to actually make an informed decision. They're not just trying to figure out who's got money in that first 48 hours of legal tampering and then deciding right then. So I don't know. I don't know whether the offers have exceeded or been lower than J.J. Watt's expectations. I think he went into it knowing he was going to take his time with it. And later Clayton clarified his comments in a tweet, which I feel like he shouldn't have had to clarify because he said, I think it's going to be Tennessee, Buffalo, or Green Bay. He said, people are misinterpreting what I said on radio today. I said Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo were leading teams for J.J. Watt, but not the final three. Watt hasn't narrowed his list. The Cleveland Browns are still in, so are the Raiders. He has a dozen teams after him. That, you know what, honestly, that feels like it's a little bit less clarifying than it was, because now it does. That sounds like more authoritatively saying that Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo are the leading teams for J.J., but there are others in the mix. He uses that word are that you talked about.
Yeah. We'll get to the salary cap situation with some of these teams in just a second, because that's going to factor in for sure.
Yeah.
Do you,
it's Seth, a very meta discussion we're having.
Are you? It is. But
I just learned what meta means like 15 minutes ago, so I'm trying to work it in and sound like I'm smart.
Can I just tell you that I'm a low key not a fan of that word because it feels like that's a word that writers who are trying to sound overly intelligent use it all the time. And I don't even know that half of them know how to use the word meta. Anyways, that's...
No. It's that same group of people. The same group of English majors who write about football for a living that think if they cite some advanced stats that all of a sudden they're good at math.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Use the word meta here. Nobody, 90% of the people won't know what it means. Seth, just... I'm going to put Green Bay and Buffalo aside for a second. Are you buying Tennessee as a team? Okay, because you have said all along that your assessment of the situation would be that J.J. just doesn't seem like a guy who's going to go to a division rival of the Houston Texans.
There's that. If he does, I think he would genuinely weigh it as a negative compared to a lot of athletes who I think it's completely fine when guys do that. you know, if their own team loved him so much, they would have made him a better offer.
Sure.
So, I'm not opposed, but I think he's going to actually weigh that because of his special relationship with the city of Houston. But the biggest thing with Tennessee, aside from all that, is that they're a really, really, really bad defense. Just an awful defense. And it's not like they've got a ton of money to go out and make other changes or improvements. So, the chance that J.J. Watt coming in is all of a sudden going to completely change their fortunes. We know what happens. One good defensive player can't change an entire team. Yeah. And I don't think that would necessarily be the best situation for him. So there are too many negative check marks for Tennessee that unless they really blow everybody away with the offer, I don't think he ends up there.
We're talking about John Clayton surmising that J.J. Watt's three leaders in the clubhouse would be Buffalo, Green Bay, and Tennessee. One thing that should be pointed out here, anytime we're mentioning teams that are in the mix for J.J. Watt, all three of those teams, Seth, right now are all over the salary cap, the projected salary cap. The cap is projected to be, when it gets finalized here in the next couple weeks, is projected to be around $182 million. A little over $180 million bucks is projected to be the cap. That's $18 million lower than it was this season. So teams are already going to have to be making adjustments and cutting guys just to get to the cap. A lot of these teams are over the cap, including until J.J. Watt got released. The Texans were well over the cap. They're not anymore. All three of those teams, the Titans, the Bills, and the Packers, they're all over the cap right now. Now, the Bills and the Titans, Seth, are both amounts over the cap that are workable amounts. Bills, yeah, a little over $1 million. You can find $1 million. Titans, a little over $2 million. You can find $2 million. It should be pointed out, the Packers are $11.5 million over the cap, and they've got a lot of work to do with guys who are already on that team to get them re-signed. The Packers are not in a great situation to make a move on J.J. Watt right now.
Right, and that's where, you know, I've said before that I don't think J.J. will need to take a discount to go to, like, I don't think he'll need to take a huge discount, but I wonder to go to a competitive team or to go to one of the teams that he wants. But I do wonder if maybe they have to get a little bit more creative with the contract or spread it out in a way that, so maybe that ends up being maybe a healthier discount than I had said previously, but it's not like I keep getting asked if he's going to go play somewhere for minimum so he can go try to chase a ring. He's not going to have to do that. He's going to get a solid, respectable offer. But can the Raiders offer more than the Titans, the Bills, or the Packers? Probably.
Would you play for the minimum if you were J.J. Watt somewhere?
If that was J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
If I would have played for minimum my last year in the league.
Sure.
It's one of the regrets I have. Was, I know my agent told me, because I was coming off a bunch of injuries. You know, I was old and banged up, and I was coming off of another big, bad knee injury. And my agent told me a couple teams said that they didn't want to insult me with a lower offer. And I was kind of in this position where I was like, well, listen, like, should I tell them that, yeah, dude, I don't care. Like, go ahead and insult me. I think this is where I misplayed it. My agent really wanted me to get a good, respectable offer. And I was kind of like, I just want to play football, but I don't want to screw myself out of any money, you know, that I don't want to screw myself out of a better contract because I'm selling myself short. So then after a while, I just decided, like, you know what, this is too much radio silence. I don't need this in my life. I'm done.
Were you still having fun playing football at that point in your career?
I wasn't with the Texans because we were having a rough time. Well, because, I mean, it was a whole, we'd had a rough stretch, obviously.
Sure.
We went 2-14. And then we, under Kubiak, because Richard Smith was the defensive coordinator,
right,
I was not having fun there. But I was perfectly willing to go have fun somewhere.
Yeah.
And I still had enough perspective to know that minimum salary in the NFL is still really, really good money.
Yeah.
So, but that was, that's that kind of cat and mouse game you play where I think some guys, when you've been in the league for 10 years, there are some guys who have a hard time because it's a blow to their ego when all of a sudden the checks start getting smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys really can't handle it. I would have been fine with it, and I totally knew the deal because of my injuries. But it's still, you don't want to screw yourself out of money that's sitting there waiting for you.
Yeah.
So you're almost negotiating against yourself and,
yeah,
and trying to play the pricing game on yourself, which is a really stressful and hard thing to do.
Here are the teams that would theoretically be in the mix for J.J. Watt that you need to know are in bad cap situations right now. So if you hear the Rams as a possible destination for J.J. Watt, know that the Rams are $33 million over the projected cap. with not a lot of maneuverability, right? They paid Jalen Ramsey. They've got a highly paid quarterback. Aaron Donald is one of the highest paid players in the league. So the Rams, I know, have been mentioned. They're way over the cap. The Chiefs, they're going to get mentioned because they were in the Super Bowl the last 2 years. They're $23 million over the cap. One of the reasons why the Steelers are not a great destination for J.J. Watt, not only do they have issues with their quarterback right now, but they're almost $20 million over the cap. And oh, by the way, they need to pay J.J. Watt's very own brother, T.J. Watt, at some point here. So the Steelers are not in a great financial situation. The other teams that are over the cap that would
What if J.J. signs with the Steelers and then the Steelers trade T.J. Watt away to
that make would be ironic. That would be ironic. Green Bay, the Bears, the Titans, the Bills, all over the cap to varying degrees. Now, teams, Seth, that are in decent cap situations that would be in the mix for J.J. Watt, Seattle, they're about $4 million under the cap. The 49ers, they're about $13 million under the cap. The Buccaneers are $13 million under the cap, but as you outlined yesterday, Seth, they've got a slew of free agents they need to take care of. Lavonte David, Chris Godwin, Dominican Sue, several others.
They're open to renegotiating Tom Brady's deal, so maybe they save a little bit of money if they stretch that out. But they still, they've got their own. Would they rather have? They might rather have J.J. Watt than Ndamukong Suh, though.
Maybe.
So,
Ravens and Browns. Ravens are $18 million under the cap. Browns are $20 million under the cap. So those are two teams that are actually in the same division as his brothers that would seemingly be in pretty good shape to give J.J. Watt a respectable deal. So. There's your cheat sheet. If you're at the water cooler today and you're talking about J.J. Watt with your coworkers, just drop on them. If they drop the Chiefs on you or the Steelers, you're like, bro, have you even looked at SpotRack or OverTheCap.com? Those teams are way over the cap, way over the cap. All right, a reminder here that we are trying to help folks during the pandemic and also last week's winter storm. Okay, I'm giving you specific instructions here. You know we're doing the Sports Radio 610 Small Biz shout-out. If you haven't heard about this, we're asking you owners or people who work for small businesses here in town who've been affected going through tough times to not just email smallbusiness@sportsradio610.com, but we want to know your story. We want to know what is it that's made it so hard to go through these times. Maybe you have a personal story you want to share because we want to share those stories with our audience and help jumpstart your business, but we want to know the details. So if you can email us smallbusiness@sportsradio610.com so we can share your story with the world. We would really appreciate that and hopefully get you guys going again. The Sports Radio 610 Small Biz shout out. smallbusiness@sportsradio610.com. Get those emails fingers cranked up now. Where are the Astros with Lance McCullers long term? We got the update from Lance McCullers himself next. A lot of contract talk in this town right now about players and their long term viability here in town. Lance McCullers is one of them. We've talked a lot about Carlos Correa's potential contract extension this week, but Lance McCullers, who is a draft classmate of Carlos Correa, same year Carlos Correa drafted first overall, Lance McCullers, also a high draft pick and a very good friend of Lance McCullers, he actually took to Twitter to clarify where things stand contractually right now. He replied to a tweet from what looks like a fan, where this fan was replying to some audio from the MLB Network about Lance McCullers. Lance McCullers saying, expressing his love for Houston, saying he wants to be here. This particular person on Twitter, whose name is Mario, said, no, Boris is his agent. He'll go free agent after the year and take the best deal out there. Astros will be in the running, but a lot will depend on this year. Nothing but respect for McCullers. I'll never forget his pennant-clinching performance. I was counting curveballs, too. Of course, a nod to the 24 consecutive curveball outing that he had back in 2017 against the Yankees.
So very, very complimentary, but I think probably a realistic approach to things. Lance found reason to get a little offended.
He's good at that. Lance is good at putting the chip on his shoulder.
Lance didn't flip out on him or anything, but yeah, that was a little like Lance found what he thought was a little bit of a slight in that assessment.
He did. Here's what Lance McCullers tweeted 17 hours ago. A reply to the tweet that I just read. He said, I actually would prefer to reach an agreement with the Astros before free agency. The entire organization knows I want to be there, and I've not heard a word. Crazy how players are always the bad guys somehow. Lots of times it is not how it seems. I'm just much more open about it. I don't know that tweet was necessarily painting Lance out to be a bad guy. Seth.
No, not at all. I mean, I have somebody that understands free agency. I suppose there's maybe you could sense a little bit of anti-Boris sentiment in there.
Sure.
But what that fan needs to acknowledge is that, you know who else is represented by Boris? Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
And Altuve signed his deal, what, it was 2 years before free agency.
He did.
It's not, Boris clients don't always test free agency and try to extract the absolute maximum. I think Boris, as good as he is at getting guys really big deals, or at least at making it seem like he's the guy that's getting the big deals, he also does, he works for his clients. And like it was with Altuve, I think Altuve wanted to be here, you know, had a price in mind probably that was acceptable to him, and he went out and got it. And I think that Lance understands the deal. Lance knows that his injury history is not going to help him in free agency as much as it would, you know, obviously if he'd ever pitched over a couple hundred innings or so, then it might be different. But I think for a lot of reasons, including the fact that Lance has been just hardcore all about the city of Houston since he hit the major leagues, yeah, I think he's totally open to signing before he hits free agency.
Seth, knowing that the ceiling salary-wise for each guy, Correa and McCullers, is different. Like, if Correa hits his ceiling as a player, he's going to get Manny Machado, Bryce Harper-type offers. You know, 10 years, $300 million. If Lance reaches his ceiling, Lance's ceiling is probably a 5 or 6 inning starter who's very, very good. He's not going to get $30 million, but he's going to get a lot of money if he hits his ceiling. Let me ask you this. If you're the Astros and you've got to sign one of them before free agency, whose injury history scares you more? The weirdness of all the Carlos Correa injuries and the back?
Oh,
or Lance McCullers, who had the worst thing happen to you that you could have happen as a pitcher, but the history post Tommy John surgery, you know, he's probably not going to need Tommy John surgery again. You know what I mean?
If I thought that at any moment in his entire life, Lance McCullers would ever be okay with moving to the bullpen, I'd be a little less nervous about his injury history. But I know, like, Lance will go down swinging on that.
Yeah.
He is just, man, when people ask him about if he'd ever consider a move to the bullpen, he's not a huge fan of that.
I don't blame him. You're not going to make $25 million a year as a closer, I don't think. You know, He's got a chance. If he pitches at an all-star level for an entire season, someone's going to give him a lot of money. Let me apply numbers to it. You've got to give one of these two contracts before the season starts. So we've got no further clarity on injuries or anything with either guy.
Okay.
You've got to
give me the number, because that's the big difference. One is a potentially crippling contract if it doesn't work out.
You've got to give Correa 8 years, $250 million, or you've got to give Lance McCullers 5 years, $100 million. So either $20 million a year for a shorter contract for McCullers, or an 8-year contract at $30 million a year for Correa.
Oh, that's really, really hard. I'm going to go.
I'm going to do a poll, by the way.
Sean, I'm looking at the starting pitchers right now. You know, and Greinke's the only starting pitcher at this moment who's pitched over 175 innings in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries are a big concern with his bullpen right now, or with this staff, starting staff right now. Oh, that's hard. I'm going to go. $20 million a year?
$20 million a year for 5 years for McCullers.
For 5 years?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with McCullers.
McCullers. Interesting. Okay.
Versus $30 million a year.
And I'm not having you do 10 years for Correa. This will take him to age 35. And you can move him to third base at some point when he's 32 years old.
All right. Okay, I'm going to flip-flop on this. I'll take Correa.
Okay, good. Makes it a good question. I'm going to put a poll up and see what the people say. Yeah. It's tough. I would go Correa as well. I just think...
Damn it, this is hard.
Yeah.
Is this harder than it should be?
No.
Yeah, everybody weigh in on this poll. Okay, I'm not making this harder than it should be. These are two players that have serious issues with injuries and serious concerns moving forward.
But you want, theoretically, if they're healthy, you want both guys moving forward. You got to pick one before the season starts.
They've both had awesome moments in the playoffs, too.
That's what's
really, honestly, I'm thinking about 24 straight curveballs.
Yes!
I'm thinking about Correa's home runs.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what, All right, you get to the playoffs. What do the people always say? What do the old-time baseball folks always say? It's all about pitching when you get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the Dodgers and the Astros scored like 49 runs in one game.
You're about to flip-flop again. You're about to go back to McCullers.
I can't. This is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my entire life.
So, just shifting gears real quick, because we were talking about J.J. Watt in the previous segment. Maybe the offers are a little better than what they're made out to be.
No. It's the 5 years. The 5 years is what's doing it for me for McCullers.
Okay.
Yeah. 5 years, $20 million. I can take it because it's only 5 years.
Okay.
So if the injuries are an issue, he's still going to keep pitching.
Yeah.
You're still going to get good baseball out of him. And right. It's only a 5 year deal.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you're not thinking about this as you wind out the 2020s. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'll see you in 3 minutes, Flippy Floppy. I'll see you back on Correa in 3 minutes. Diana Rossini, NFL reporter for ESPN, Seth, reports that JJ reported this earlier. Shout out to Caleb Leachman, listener, who brought this to our attention on Twitter. JJ Watt has received several offers from teams. The best offer he has received right now, this is pretty good, is between $15 and $16 million a year. Now, we don't know who the team is, but if you had asked me what's the over-under for annual contract value for J.J. Watt that he winds up getting, I would put it at $11.5 million. This is way over that amount. Way over that amount.
He should take that contract. I don't care who it's
J.J. Watt signs with Bengals.
I don't care who it is.
J.J. Watt re-signs with the Texans.
remember when... This is the way I remember it. I'm going to have to fact check this. Remember when Reggie White said one of the biggest factors in where he went in free agency? Because he was one of the NFL's first free agents.
Right.
Was going to be in a place where he could help inner city youth.
And Green Bay.
He chose Green Bay.
It's like three kids.
Well, we don't quite have a city, Reggie, but we could take some of our rural impoverished and bring them into this village of ours that we call a city, perhaps. Yeah.
Reggie, here's our inner city youth. There's only three kids here. What are you talking about? This is them. All right. We talked last week about how 2021 can redeem itself as a year. It's not been a good year so far here in Houston. One big way that 2021 can redeem itself that I can't believe we didn't bring up last week. We'll have it for you next.
I'm ready to start spring training and ready to play a good season. We have a good team, and I'm doing everything possible that I can to be in the best shape, in the best mental position to help my team this year.
Jose Altuve met with the media yesterday. I love Jose Altuve. Love him so much. He said he has changed his mental approach to the game this year.
I think just have a better approach, a game plan. You know, when you go out there trying to do something instead of just react at something, you're definitely going to be better. I feel like this year I have a game plan. I know what I want to do, and I think that's going to help me a lot.
Seth, the best outcome from the postseason last year for the Astros obviously would have been getting back to and winning the World Series. But if I'm going to get a consolation prize out of last year's postseason, Jose Altuve was otherworldly Jose Altuve during the ALDS and the ALCS. He was amazing in those two series. That was good to see.
Yeah, it was. And if you kind of – usually I don't like doing this stuff because it's an easy way to cherry pick stats and whatnot, but – as slow a start in a regular season as Altuve did, when you combine his playoff stats with his regular season stats, it starts to look actually like a pretty good season. And in such a shortened season as last year, I think that matters. I think that's notable. And I think one thing that Altuve is saying there is just something that's so true amongst athletes all the time, is that a lot of it just boils down to simplifying things. It really, you know, you talk to pro golfers, and as much as you could drive yourself insane reading different articles in Golf Digest about how to fix your swing and everything. With pro golfers, like so often, it's about a little tweak. Like, oh, I moved my foot in a half inch. You know, baseball players is the same way. They change their stance a little bit or what have you, or they just go back to something that they were doing before. But it's always simple. And it was really, really hard last year for the Astros to simplify anything. I mean, they had, aside from all the COVID challenges, aside from the fact that they'd made deep playoff runs 3 years in a row, and a lot of guys were just simply battered and bruised up from that, but then you had the scandal and all of the pressure and scrutiny that came along with it. And Altuve, look, you can't say that he was completely innocent in the deal because he was a part of it. He didn't shut it down when he could have, yada, yada, yada. But Altuve bore the most scorn from the rest of the country and yet had the least to do of it of any of the offensive players for the Astros.
Yeah.
I mean, Altuve did not participate, and yet somehow he became the face of the scandal. And for a guy that's just so committed about being unselfish and about being his teammates, and who wouldn't really defend himself even, that's a whole lot to take on. And I don't know if you saw a sports psychologist in the offseason or what have you, but he was dealing with a lot. And then you find out that he was dealing with even more than just the baseball side of
stuff. Yeah, we'll have that from Dusty Baker. In fact, let's play that here. Dusty Baker on how tough last year was on Jose Altuve.
Last year was hard on him. You know, it was hard on him, you know, just hard on all of us. And then in the middle of that, you know, he had, some deaths in his family, which he didn't say anything about. And, you know, I mean, there are things in life sometimes that people think don't affect us. And indeed they, you know, they do. I mean, like I said, I didn't know him. I respected him from the other side of the field, but, you know, I see him singing and yeah, he has a bounce in his step and, you know, he appears happy and, you know, he's going to have a big year for us.
Okay. So a couple things there, Seth. One, that's the first that I'm hearing that Altuve had deaths in his family during the season last year. So add that in for Jose Altuve. Dusty didn't specify there, but death, plural. The other thing was that Dusty talked about at the end, that just got me thinking that Dusty's saying, you know, I didn't really know him other than from being across the field from him when I got here last year. I do wonder with Altuve and really everybody in that clubhouse, just how much more settled things feel this year. Because not only were you dealing with the pandemic right in the middle of spring training last year, your manager got hired at the most unorthodox time for a manager to get hired. The end of January, coming off of a World Series the year before.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you know what I mean? So what, I mean, and Jose Altuve obviously was familiar with who Dusty Baker was, but I would imagine that it's a little bit different having a guy who's never been your manager before as you're going through slumps, walking up to you and giving you advice on things when it's been A.J. Hinch that's been doing it the last 5 years.
Let me ask you this, Sean. Altuve right now by one sportsbook is a 40-1 chance to win the MVP, win the AL MVP.
Yeah.
Which is probably, it's probably the lowest he's been in a long time, right? Mm-hmm. If he gets himself into some MVP candidate discussions this year, obviously the insults will be easy, the jokes will be easy, people will be asking him where's the buzzer hidden this time, all that. But do you think it actually could end up being really good for his legacy? Because A, obviously he'll be doing it when they're not. I don't think any rational person will think the Astros are trying to get away with any cheating this year. So there's that. But I do think that now with some time away from the scandal, I think people might be more willing to listen to the actual story about Altuve and look at the evidence that he wasn't participating in the scandal. Go back to 2014 from 2014 on, after walk-off home runs, he was trying not to have his shirt ripped off by teammates. And then also, realistically, I get really tired of people acting like his tattoo excuse or story was some far-fetched, ridiculous story. Like, think about in that moment. So Altuve had this unfinished tattoo on his chest. He's already had several years of experience in trying to not have guys rip his jersey off after walk-offs. He's coming into home plate. Greg Rosenthal grabs him and asks him, why did he not want his shirt ripped off? Do you expect him to answer really like, oh, well, I have an unfinished tattoo and it doesn't look all that great?
In the
great.
Heat of the moment, right.
So he came up with the best he could do, which is like, my wife got jealous. And people point to that like that's evidence of him lying or whatnot. Yeah, it was probably lying, but it was because he didn't want to say, well, I've got an unfinished tattoo.
Right.
It's all of this stuff that I guess Sean, I was watching Pat McAfee a couple weeks ago, and I love Pat McAfee, but he had, what's his name, Jeff Passan on.
Mm-hmm.
And McAfee, like Jeff Passan was telling McAfee, no, there's just absolutely zero evidence that there was any buzzer ever. No, it's never come up. Nobody's ever said it. Nobody ever testified. There's just zero evidence. And McAfee, who does not, he admittedly does not follow baseball at all, but I feel like he's like the casual fan. He was dumbfounded. He thought it was proven. He thought that was part of the scandal. He thought 100%. And there are people in baseball and fans around the league that feel that way too. And I just, This is one of the things that bothers me most in sports. I have like a pit in my stomach when I talk about it. The fact that Altuve has been run through the ringer, and yes, because he knew about it and didn't say anything and all that, but he didn't even participate in the damn scandal. And so many people in America think that he was like the face of the scandal.
Yeah, and I guess to answer your original question, Seth, then the answer is yes, he's going to need to have a big year like that in order to cleanse the haters from his life. He's going to need to get back to having a year where he hits 315. He approaches 200 hits. He hits for a little bit of power. He hits in big spots. And I'll tell you what, the Astros are going to need him to do that because the dude's making $30 million a year now. Yep. They need Jose Altuve from a fiscal standpoint. They need him to produce.
So before we get to headlines, I got to tidy this up because I told everybody I'd do the fact-checking. Yeah. We were talking about decisions that free agents might make and whether they'll base them on money or championship or whatever. And right. Usually it ends up being about the money, but my favorite all-time example of this was Reggie White, who was one of the very first free agents in the NFL who I'm going to lay out the criteria
that his
agent laid out for what type of team Reggie White was looking for.
So the exercise here is we're going to go through these criteria and see how Green Bay matches up with them.
There's just a couple here, but this is really industry. There's two criteria that are important. So remember, Reggie White is a legend with the Eagles. A lot of young kids these days don't even know that Reggie White ever played for the Eagles, but he's going to be one of the first free agents ever. So Jimmy Sexton laid out the guidelines. Number one was that in 16 years of high school, college, and pro ball, he's never been on a championship team. Mm. So he wants to go to a team committed to winning. He would go to the Green Bay Packers, who had not been to the playoffs in 10 years. The other big one...
Doesn't mean they weren't committed to it.
The other big one is wherever he goes, he wants to establish a Christian ministry, fine, mm-hmm. and work with the needy of the inner city. Mm. So working with the inner city was of vital importance, Sean,
huge.
To Reggie White and where he went. So he chose a place known for all of its inner city issues, the Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yep. The Boys and Girls Club of Green Bay shows up. There's like four white kids with German last names. Like, here's our inner city youth.
They offered him a good deal. Now, he did have Holmgren. That was why that article was titled, Did Holmgren Impersonate God? Because Reggie White said that, hey, God spoke to him and told him to go to Green Bay, which honestly, I feel like that's a win for God. It worked out pretty.
It did.
Worked out pretty dang well.
Yeah.
Reggie White, through the fame that he gained as a Green Bay Packer Super Bowl champion, probably helped out a lot of inner city youth all over the country.
God is a hell of a scout, no question about that. No question about that. All right, let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, so we got clarity on Tiger Woods' injuries yesterday. We have not mentioned Tiger on the show yet today. It was the big story yesterday. Tiger Woods, in the wake of his, car accident earlier this week, we got detail on what exactly Tiger Woods is dealing with coming back from now. Multiple open fractures to his lower right leg. And by open fractures, that means poking through the skin. Sorry, it's what it is. He had a rod placed in his tibia. Seth, he had screws and pins placed in his foot and ankle. Trauma to the muscle and soft tissue in the area. Apparently, he was filming a series for Golf TV, and he was on his way to go film that morning. Justin Herbert and Drew Brees are now the answer to a trivia question. Who are the two NFL quarterbacks that Tiger Woods was getting ready to go meet for a photo shoot the morning that he rolled his vehicle into a gully in Southern California? Justin Herbert and Drew Brees, who were sitting around looking at each other at 8 in the morning going, where's Tiger? Tiger's not here yet.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So those are the injuries.
I guess broken
legs and screws and pins everywhere.
So yesterday on the Deceptively Fast podcast, Sean, I was talking to Drew Hodgson, mm-hmm. former Texans center, and a friend of mine. He co-hosts a lot on it. But he was a surgical sales rep for a few years when he was done playing football. And even when I was reading what the surgery was, Drew Hodgson said, oh, wow, they put a – was it his tibia or his fibula?
It said tibia.
Tibia? Okay. Yeah. Is that the big one or the little one? I asked him, and I couldn't even remember. Tibia is the big one, right?
I'm not sure.
He said it's rare for them to put – whichever one they put a rod in, he said it's rare for him to put a rod in that.
Okay.
So it sounded like a big deal.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like the leg was pretty much pulverized.
I'm unrealistically optimistic about Tiger Woods' ability to come back from this. And will he win another major? I don't know. I hate those discussions. Maybe, probably. Look, the oldest guy to ever win a major was Jack Nicklaus. I believe he was 46. The oldest guy ever to win the Masters was Jack Nicklaus at 46. Oldest guy to ever win a major was 48 years old.
Okay.
So it'd be Tiger Woods sometime in the next couple of years, if he came back from this, would be one of the oldest major winners ever, and he'd be doing it after not only all of the other injuries and surgeries that he's already had, but then this very traumatic car accident.
Yeah. I'm looking at the list of injuries. Tiger's injury/issue timeline, Seth. I mean, he was a phenom for a decade. He was the greatest thing we've ever seen in golf for a decade. And then
14 years.
Yeah, then all of a sudden in August of 2007 is where it started to go sideways. Tore his ACL while he was running in August. He still won the PGA Championship.
Yeah, he tore his ACL. He played through the ACL, right. Won the PGA Championship. But this was like the beginning of a long slew of everything.
Yes, yes. So then in July of 2008, 8 days after winning the U.S. Open, he had the fourth surgery on the knee where he had torn his ACL, so he didn't finish the golf season that year. November 2009
He finished.
Well, just November 2009 was what everybody's going to kind of view as the ultimate inflection point, I think, in his career. That was the fender bender where there may or may not have been a golf club that came through the window from his wife just before that.
I was wondering about that exactly, what was eventually all verified and everything. And like, because remember, there are so many rumors flying around about actually like how it happened, everything. The way it is in the official record now is that while Tiger was passed out, that's when she smashed the window with the golf club. I don't know. Because remember, I think the initial story was that she was like, she smashed it as he was driving away. Who knows?
That's how I like to picture it. Yeah, it's a little more salacious that way. But we know that he went to sex rehab in January of 2010 for 45 days.
45 days?
Yeah.
So I feel like, man, boy, if there's one way to test your... That's a lot of sexlessness for 45 days. What do you do with 45 sex addicts all locked up for 45 days together?
I was about to put that to the text page. What exactly is sex addiction rehab like? 713-572-4610.
Group therapy for sex addicts sounds like the worst idea ever. It sounds like sending a bunch of people to a bar to have an AA meeting. Like, oh, hey, here, I need 45 days with 19 other people who can't get enough sex. And
the group?
We'll just chat. We'll spend a lot of time with each other. We'll get to know each other really well. And that'll be it. You know, then we'll go off to our rooms at night and everything will be cool.
When I visualize the group meetings, you know, where you've got 10 or 12 sex addicts there sitting and talking, Seth, to me, it feels like it'd just be like a podcast version of what Penthouse Forum used to be back in the day.
They're all telling their stories.
Like, we should be recording this and put it up. I would download that podcast.
Like in The Other Guys, when the cops are together, it's the support group for cops who have fired their weapon in the line of duty.
Yes.
And they're all the psychologist is like trying to be empathetic and everything, and the cops are all like, "So I got him in my sights, and I took him down. 1, 2, 3, bam, bam,
yes,
bam."
Yes, exactly.
So yeah, all these horrible sex addict stories would be very graphic.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I could see. Yeah. So you got one sex addict coming up telling the story about how his wife walked in on him or something, and all the other sex addicts were like, "Yeah." So then, what'd she do? Could you see in her eye? Did it turn her on a little bit?
They're all coming to meetings with blankets over their laps.
I gotta be a sex addict.
Right, right.
I gotta go spend a week in sex addict camp.
Every story,
that's what I'd call it. I would call it sex camp.
Every story at sex addict camp begins with, "I know that this sounds a little outrageous, but every detail is true." And then Tiger had a... Back to Tiger.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Then he had a slew of back surgeries. Boy, his back surgery list here, boy. From March of 2014 through April of 2017, four different back surgeries with an Achilles tendon mixed in.
And that's where the changes in swing coaches, the changes in caddies, all of that stuff really. I mean, it all started with the... He had that ACL before the car accident, but the car accident is obviously where everything really went awry.
Yep, it exacerbated it. So that's what's going on with Tiger Woods. Meanwhile, shifting gears in headlines... you know, it's tough to give shout-outs to other teams in the AFC South. We just hate the AFC South. Except when they do nice things for us here in Houston, then we must recognize. And yesterday, Seth, the Indianapolis Colts, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Tennessee Titans showed support for their fellow AFC South division member, the Houston Texans.
Took it to the limit.
That's right, with a joint donation of $100,000 to the Houston Harris County 2021 Winter Storm Relief Fund. Following the severe winter weather that swept through the county last week, the NFL Foundation will match the donation of the AFC South clubs, bringing the total donation amount to $200,000. We should mention here as well that the Texans, Janice McNair and the Texans, giving $500,000 to that fund earlier this week. So raising a lot of money for people who are impacted by the winter storm. Seth, big thanks to the Titans, the Jags, and the Indianapolis Colts today, at least, for being so generous to us here in the city of Houston. That was very, very nice of them.
Winter Storm Uri. I'm going to start calling it by its proper name. I feel like we need to. There's too many names floating around.
Respect
out there.
The storm.
I knew he had a, yeah. Are people worried that there'll be an anti-Russian sentiment attached to Winter Storm Uri or something? I assume that's a Russian name.
I guess so. Yeah, U-R-I is how it's spelled. So big thanks to those NFL franchises for helping us out here in the city of Houston.
Do you think that's a male or a female Russian name?
It sounds female to me, but I'm not sure. I'll let you do the research on that. Meanwhile, the Rockets last night, same old story. They have now lost 9 in a row. Boy, I feel like just like 2.5 weeks ago, we were like, man, this team's fun to watch. They had won 6 in a row. Like, hey, this no Harden thing is cool. Look at him working the ball around and whatnot. They're still working the ball around. The problem is once they work it around to the shooter, chances are the shooter is going to fire up a brick. They are the worst shooting team. Literally, they're the worst shooting team in the NBA. They lose last night in Cleveland to the Cavs, 112-96. And Seth, I guess the story with this team now is that with Christian Wood out and with Boogie Cousins waived a couple of days ago, guess what we're back to?
Small ball, baby. It's going to electrify, going to revolutionize it. And nobody's played like this since 1953.
Are you
ready for it, National Basketball Association? Yeah. I think not. You're out there with your clunky big men. Can't keep up with that.
Yeah. Well, you know who's not ready for it? The actual backcourt of the Houston Rockets. Here was John Wall last night. John Wall, not a big fan of small ball.
It's just difficult, to be honest with me. I'm a person that likes to pass, and you know, I'm used to finding my bigs on the roll. Not even just having a lob throw. I never really had one of those two. I got Seawood for real. But just having a big, you throw the ball to that can finish down there. It just makes our team more dynamic. When we have all smalls out there, it's kind of tough because they're just switching 1 through 5 and lowering the paint against us and making it tough. And like you've seen, if it's just one or two guys out there at a time, you know, me, EG be out some games, Vic be out some games, I might be out some games. And then we're basically just on the perimeter playing 1-on-1 the whole time. We definitely need some type of paint presence. You need that. You know what I mean? I just think with any team, you're going to have that. And that's why I feel like we kind of struggle at times because we're down there doing the best we can to fight and trying to get rebounds and do the little things. But it's a lot harder when you got a 7-foot guy.
I think the other thing that he did, as tough as he was on that part of it, he took it easy and at least not also saying, you know, they're packing the paint and we suck at shooting threes.
Yes.
Like, they'd be fine because, you know, in previous versions of the Rockets, you might say, well, okay, yeah, they're packing the paint. Then, you know, just shoot them to death. And you can't do that anymore.
No.
Not with this crew. John Wall, he's like, I'm John Wall. Yeah, I'm shooting the ball better, but come on. Give me a break.
Right. I'm not a sniper. I'm doing better than I used to, but I'm still John Wall, damn it. Yeah.
Uri, by the way, is not a Russian name unless you happen to be a Russian Jew, because it is a Hebrew name. So maybe Mike Meltzer, who's a Jewish person from Russia, might have some relatives named
some
Uri.
Uri's on the family tree for Meltzer, yeah.
So Winter Storm Uri is named after a boy's name of Hebrew origin, meaning my flame, my light. That doesn't sound right at all. That sounds damn ironic is what that... That sounds cruelly ironic.
A flame or
my
a light.
My light in a storm that left millions of people without power or heat. Yeah.
Or thanks light.
A lot. Yeah. Thanks a lot, ironic storm namers.
Yeah. Shifting gears here in headlines. For gambling enthusiasts like me, Seth, we might have gotten a little bit of good news. I'm anxious to ask Darren Revelle about this in a couple of hours when he's on with us. A bill filed on Tuesday here in Texas would give professional sports teams the opportunity to be licensed sports betting operators, provided voters approve a constitutional amendment to legalize sports wagering in the state this coming November. If passed, the bill which was filed by Republican Representative Dan Huberty, would decriminalize sports wagering and legalize it effective January 1st of next year. The House joint resolution for a constitutional amendment tied to the bill would be on the ballot in November, allowing voters to choose for or against the resolution worded, quote, the constitutional amendment authorizing the legislature to legalize sports wagering in this state. In other words, Seth, we're getting closer. We're chipping away at the chance for me to legally bet on apps from my phone during the show with you. It's increasing the opportunity for me to be really distracted as I place my bets. And you're going, Sean, I'm talking to you. And I'm like, Seth, I'm placing my bets legally right now. The interesting thing here is the part that would allow the professional sports owners to essentially be sportsbook operators. Tillman Fertitta, Jim Crane, Cal McNair.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Where there would be kiosks in the stadiums and things like that.
Boy, I don't know. Look, I'm no Puritan.
We know that.
I like vice of all manner and variety in moderation, right? You can define moderation by your own methods. I don't know. There's something about gambling on the premises at a sporting event like football or something where I feel like I'm still a little bit of a Puritan when it comes to this. I'd rather just like keep the vice with the vice and keep the sports events at the sports events, but don't turn it into a damn horse track.
Okay. I'm kind of excited for it if you want to know the truth.
I know you're excited about it, but you're a heathen.
Well, yeah. Still. The owners, I would think, are a little excited about it as well. It's a chance to generate more revenue. I don't know if you heard this. Right now, the NFL and Disney are really, really far apart on the package, on the Monday Night Football package. These poor billionaires, Seth, may not get their billions and billions that they're used to getting on these TV contracts.
Well, I didn't read the article. I read the headline. The NFL teams, the NFL's hoping to basically double the broadcast rights fees over the course of the next few contracts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seems a little aggressive.
It seems aggressive, but every time they come out with a new TV deal, it feels like, wow.
Yeah, they win a lot.
And even though the salacious headlines are always, well, NFL ratings drop this, NFL ratings drop that, it's still far and away the most watched television. If you lump all NFL programming together, the top watched shows are every year dominated by NFL football games. And in the age of DVR and on-demand viewing and the internet and all that, there's advertisers still want to pay a premium for events where people actually have to sit there and watch the commercials.
Yep.
You know, I know that progressive guy that makes fun of people that are acting like their parents. The only reason I know about him is because I sit there and I watch games in sports. That's the only. Sometimes when I'll sit and watch some other program on live TV, I'm dumbstruck by like the products that are out there that are heavily advertised, but because it's on Nickelodeon or something, I've never even heard of it before, but it's like a whole nother universe where these advertisements are being run, but I hardly ever see them. With sports, I see all these ads. Do you know, I know exactly someday when I need help with erectile dysfunction, I'm going to know exactly what my choices are.
Damn right.
I'm going to know exactly which type of bathtub I'm going to take the pill in. All of that stuff.
Yep. Because of live sports programming. Indeed. Someone said, if Cal is setting the lines, I'm in. That's funny. Now, that's funny right there.
That's funny right there. I laugh at that all the time.
I'm sure you do.
Oh, I was listening to Boston radio the other day. I was just taking a look around the podcasts. And what's our sister station up there, the Sports Hub?
It used to be Toucher and Rich.
It's
a weird situation. WEEI is now our sister station up
there. Oh, okay. So yeah. Toucher and Rich, who are on our competitors to our sister station, they were talking about Jack Easterby. They spent like a half hour on Jack Easterby.
What'd they say?
Playing some of those clips and everything. They just like playing the clips and laughing.
Like us.
And laughing and laughing, all of that. People are weighing in on what sex addict group meetings are like.
Okay.
So, and I think a couple of people are upset that we minimized the severity of sex addiction.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Let's see. There are a surprisingly large number of people in sex addiction groups. So there are hundreds of meetings a month throughout the Houston area. Not sure how many of your listeners would fall in that group, but you may have offended some people. No, our sex addiction listeners that are sex addicts would have laughed at it and said, oh, no, actually, Seth, because we did have a few people. You know, it is possible to laugh at your damn self every now and then.
No kidding. My God.
Gosh. Anyway. But there's a lot of focusing on not objectifying women, you know, like trying to stop looking and visualizing women sexually. When you're a sex addict, obviously it gets to the point where you just, it dominates your life. Like any other kind of healthy thing that can turn into an addiction, it dominates your life. And probably, it's not just the actual sex act itself, it's your obsession with it in the way it ends up having you like treat women.
Yeah.
Because you're just constantly thinking about sex with various women that you meet. It's got to be devastating for you in a lot of ways.
Did you see this?
But I feel like you should recognize the humor in it, too.
Yeah. Come on now, people. Life is short. Laugh a little bit. By the way, you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, a radio.com station.
As the son of a proud sex addict, I'll tell you that nobody would laugh about it more than my father.
That's right. All right? Yeah. Seth comes from a long line of sex addicts.
That's not true. I think it was the opposite.
You brought it up.
I probably shouldn't have mentioned my father specifically. But this guy I know is totally a sex addict. Had a father and parents who were pretty puritanical.
Known him my whole life.
It makes for some damn good stories about what his upbringing was like.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.